Welcome to Longing for Yesteryear, episode 26 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owigon. In recent months, I've received many letters from listeners, some seeking advice, others sharing what happened when they tried some of the tools I've talked about in this podcast. Some of the letters seeking advice have similar themes, so I decided to share them in theme groups. The letters I'll talk about today share the theme of communication issues and conflict around resistance to change, which is why I titled this episode Longing for Yesteryear. I'll share those letters and my responses in a moment, but first the quote for today. Today's quote is by Jack Canfield. Change is inevitable in life. You can either resist it and get run over by it, or you can choose to cooperate with it, adapt to it, and learn how to benefit from it. When you embrace change, you will begin to see it as an opportunity for growth. The first letter I'll read to you is from Beth in Maryland. Beth writes, "I am the mother of three grown sons who I raised as a single mom. It wasn't easy to raise three boys without a father, but I'm a strong and determined woman, so somehow I managed. I did it by being firm in enforcing the rules and with consistent, clear guidance about the choices they made in life. Because of that, they all turned out well, and none of them gave me the kind of trouble as teenagers that many kids give their parents, especially single moms. They always obeyed me and followed my advice, even though they didn't always agree. That's all changed now, and I am heartbroken. I know that when our children become adults, they have to live their own lives and make their own decisions, but I also believe that families should remain close and that even grown children should listen to the wisdom of their parents. I did a good job raising my boys, and I never steered them wrong, but now nobody wants to hear my opinion, and I have zero influence on their major life decisions. My two oldest sons have graduated college, are married, and have careers. They both live within 5 miles of me. My youngest is still in college, lives with me, and is engaged to be married. Brian is my oldest, Tom is the middle child, and Lawrence is my youngest. Brian married first, then Tom. Brian's wife Mary and I got along well at first, but after a while she began to be very argumentative, and I believe she's trying to turn Brian against me. I don't understand why she would do that. All I want is what's best for the two of them. When Tom got married, I just barely had a chance to get to start building a relationship with his wife, Jean, before Mary was able to turn Jean against me. Now the two of them gang up on me all the time, and it seems like we are constantly either fighting or avoiding each other. Now Lawrence's wedding to Sherry is coming up in June after he graduates college. We all agree we don't want tension and conflict around their wedding. Unfortunately, Mary and Jean argue with me about absolutely everything. Since Sherry doesn't have any family to help pay for the wedding, I told her that the best thing to do was to let me host the wedding and reception at my home, since I have a large yard and plenty of space, as long as they kept the guest list to 75 or fewer. She agreed, although she didn't seem as grateful as I would have expected her to be. As we continued making the wedding plans, Sherry needed a lot of help with all the decisions there were to be made, and I was always there to help guide her. The wedding was really beginning to take shape beautifully, although after a while there were more and more times that Sherry wasn't available to work with me on the wedding when I wanted her to, so I just went ahead without her, making sure that everything was in place to make it a beautiful wedding. One day, all of a sudden, Sherry went into a screaming fit, raging at me, saying ridiculous things like, "You should be the one to get married since you seem to think this is your wedding we're planning. Mary and Jean told me to watch out for you." I was shocked. All I was trying to do was give them the best possible wedding and help make it affordable for them. Now, Mary, Jean, and Sherry are against me. My sons are no help at all, saying that it is between me and my daughters-in-law and that they're staying out of it. How do I get Mary to stop turning them all against me? What's going on and what do I do? Here's my reply. Dear Beth, thank you for your letter. I commend you for seeking clarity and understanding about what's happening in your family dynamic. I can see that you're very invested in the success and happiness of your son's lives, and that's commendable. My thoughts are this. First, I invite you to mentally and emotionally step outside of your own perspective and try to look at the situation from the perspective of the neutral observer, and perhaps even from the perspectives of Mary Jean and Sherry. Look back on the flow of the events leading up to you writing your letter to me as though you were watching a movie. Watch without judgment or bias, simply reviewing what each character in the movie, including yourself, says and does, and the reactions of the others to those words and actions. Pay close attention to what you see, again, without judgment or bias. This isn't about right or wrong or good or bad, just neutral observation about the dynamic. What do you notice? What cause-effect patterns are there? Without knowing your daughters-in-law's perspectives of the situation and thinking about what you said in your letter from my neutral observer perspective, I see this. The practice you had when raising your sons served you and them so well that you are strongly inclined to want to continue that because you see that being beneficial to your son's well-being. Perhaps you are more familiar with viewing your son's lives as an extension of your own than as something separate from you over which you may have no control or influence. You may be fearful for their well-being as they begin their separate lives, start families of their own, and live their lives more independent of you. Perhaps there is a sense of loss of control over the events of their lives and the impacts of those events, and some emotion that goes with that. It seems important to you to have a continued positive impact on your sons' lives, which now include their wives. You may be wondering what place and role you have in their lives now that they have wives sharing their lives, and may be feeling some fear and loss around that. While your sons may have some comfort level with your influence and decision-making in their lives because that's what they've always experienced, their wives bring with them their own ideas and experience, and want to have the power to use that to the benefit of the lives they are building with your sons, their husbands. Even when we have the best intentions, trying to make decisions for others or coerce them into doing what we think is best for them, rather than honoring what they feel is best for themselves, usually causes feelings of disempowerment, oppression, and loss of control, which will often evoke frustration, rage, and eventually dramatic escape. Your experience of your daughters-in-law's all ganging up on you may be the result of all three of them having the same experience with you, with similar levels of upset that resulted, which they're all trying to communicate to you together in the hope that if one of them hasn't been able to convince you of how important these concerns and issues are, that all three of them together might have more of an impact on you. That said, I can also see that the experience of all three of them expressing their upset to you at the same time can be an overwhelming, frightening experience that you want to resist or close off to because of its intensity. Because there is only one of you and three of them, you may feel especially vulnerable, with a stronger desire to defend yourself against what feels like a group attack. So, in answer to your question about what's going on, that's what I see from the information I have. In answer to your questions about what you might do about the situation, here's what I invite you to do next. After taking some time to look at the dynamic from your neutral observer perspective, again, without attaching judgment about who's right or wrong, I invite you to consider what unmet needs are inspiring each person's actions, including your own. What ways might those needs get met, yours and theirs, in ways that are different and more collaborative than the actions you and the others have taken in the past? Thinking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I talked about in episode 3, I'm guessing that all four of you are having unmet love and belonging needs, esteem needs, and self-actualization needs. Here's why I say that. Your daughters-in-law are likely trying to create their place in the family structure which is about love and belonging needs. They also probably want to be recognized as competent life partners to your sons, which is about their esteem needs. And they most likely want to have the opportunity and empowerment to create families of their own based on their own wisdom, skills, and values, which is rooted in their self-actualization needs. As for your experience of your own needs, I'm guessing that your love and belonging needs may be triggered by not knowing how you will fit into your son's lives now that they're starting families of their own in which you are not a primary figure. It sounds like a good part of your self-esteem is built around being a good mother to your sons, and now you may be wondering where that fits into their lives too. And if you're no longer the primary person in their lives and you don't have as much influence over their decisions, you may be feeling unmet self-actualization needs if you feel thwarted in being the best mother you can be to them. Your son's actions of not wanting to get involved may well be inspired by survival needs. Who wants to get in the middle of a fight between four strong women, one of them being their wife and one of them being their mother? While I say that with some humor, that could very well be their experience. Or, at the very least, they may be triggered at the level of their security needs, since they may fear having to choose between their mother and their wife, with the loss of either costing them someone precious who they want to keep in their life. Now that you have a broader perspective, I strongly encourage you to consider initiating a conversation about the situation using conscious communication. If you're willing to do this, please remember and give careful thought to each of the four primary components of conscious communication, which I discussed in Episode 2. The first component is defining the goal for the outcome of the conversation. What dynamic would you like to see exist as a result of this conversation? The second component is how we deliver information. What is the best choice of words to accomplish your goal? And what are the best time and place to have that conversation? Consider also the tone of voice that you will use when you share your thoughts. The third component is how we listen. Ask open-ended questions about their experience and perspective of the dynamic. Reflect back what you hear them say and verify that you heard correctly. Listen deeply to learn and understand and to best harvest the gems of wisdom they have to share with you. The fourth component is how we negotiate. Think about what you can offer them to meet their needs in exchange for what you want to request that will help meet your needs. It may help you in your preparations to listen to Episode 4 about needs-based negotiation. As you plan this conversation, you may want to consider whether you might like to have three separate conversations with each of your daughters-in-law, so that you don't feel as though you might get ganged up on, and so that you can have that one-on-one personal connection. If you think about doing that, consider whether or not you want to start first with Mary, who seems to have had the longest-lasting upset with you, or whether you want to start with Sherry, who has the shortest duration of upset with you. Remember that you and your daughters-in-law have at least two very important things in common: your love for your sons and your desire for them to live happy, fulfilling lives. This is powerful common ground and a strong foundation on which to build a more collaborative and harmonious relationship with each of your daughters-in-law. I also encourage you to look for the benefits in the changes you're experiencing as your sons mature and start their own families, and focus on those and the good things that your daughters-in-law bring into your sons' lives and into your own. Please let me know how this works out for all of you and if there is anything else I can do to help. The next letter comes from Rob in Seattle. Rob writes, I'm having a lot of arguments with people about wearing masks during this time when the COVID cases seem to be dropping. Everybody has been so angry about the mandate to wear masks and being forced to comply, even though the benefits are so obvious. Now, even though the pandemic continues and all these new strains are showing up, more and more people are no longer wearing masks, even in crowded situations. Personally, I think they're crazy. If they don't want the vaccine, that's their business. But spreading their germs becomes the business of everybody they come in contact with, and they don't seem to care in the least. I don't like to argue with people, but every time I try to talk to people about putting their mask on, or even ask them why they won't wear one, it always becomes an argument. Why are people like that? How do I make them do the right thing without it becoming an argument? Here's my reply. I appreciate your concern for your health and the health of others, Rob, and your desire to educate others about the information you feel they should know and abide by. You're right. It's hard to know what the virus is going to do next, and people have many different, sometimes very strong, opinions about that and about what does or does not need to be done to protect ourselves and others from becoming victims of the virus. Your first question is a very important one. Why do people act the way they do? I believe that's an important question to ask in any situation. Based on my own observations and understandings of the psychodynamics of human beings and what you have shared in your letter, my perspective on what's going on underneath the behaviors you described is this. Survival and security are the two needs that the majority of people feel most strongly. In their efforts to get those needs met, people will act in dramatic ways, often without forethought or awareness of the potential and real impacts of their actions. I imagine that it is your survival need that compels you to wear a mask and drives you to try to make others do the same, and that your survival needs are at the forefront of your awareness right now. That's completely understandable. Many feel the same. Others may be motivated more strongly by their need for security. I recognize that your security needs may be up for you too. When the pandemic hit, among the things we lost, and something that strongly affects us all, was the belief that tomorrow will be much like today, and that we can predict and control the future to a large degree by how we plan and structure things. All of a sudden, it seemed like nothing was predictable or in our control. Not our source of income, our sources of food and supplies, our personal safety, our kids' ability to go to school, the fulfillment of our plans, not even how close we could stand to one another or whether or not we have something covering our face, or even the ability to be with our loved ones. That's a lot to lose. It's a lot to lose, and in a very short time, with no real chance to process what's happening and mindfully adapt. People have unconscious reflexive reactions to this kind of loss, especially Americans who are more accustomed to being able to have control over their reality and see it as an absolute right. So people reach for any and every aspect of control they can find, whether it's control over where they go, who they gather with, whether or not they wear a mask, and so on. And people do not like change, especially change they did not choose or create and have no control over. When it comes to what has happened in the last year, year and a half, I think most of us long for yesteryear and are weary of change that we do not choose and cannot control. We crave the ability to control as many aspects of our life as possible. I think that's likely what's going on for those who are rushing back to the less cautious behaviors of the pre-COVID era and refusing to wear masks. They want to undo the changes that have happened and have more control over what they do and do not do. And I can't help but wonder if that's not part of what's going on for you too, Rob, at some level. Your desire to feel as though you have some control over your exposure to the virus makes you want to control other people's behavior in an effort to minimize your exposure. All of this, in my mind, are natural, normal, and understandable reactions and behavior. The challenge is, what can we do with it? Or, as you asked in your question, how do we make them do the right thing without it becoming an argument? Well, first of all, it never seems to go well when we try to make others do things. The best results seem to come from inviting, encouraging, and motivating others to do things. People are most invested in that which they create or do from their own thinking and of their own free will. In many ways, each of us decides for ourselves what the right thing to do is and live with the consequences of our choices. So, although we may not be able to make people do what we want, we can model for others what we believe to be right and good action. And when it feels appropriate, we can share the information we know, our perspective, and the decisions we've made for our own life. Given some space to consider these things, people often shift of their own accord to another way of doing things. No, that won't be everyone, but in my experience, it will be many more than would have shifted by a judgmental and argumentative approach. I'm guessing that many of my friends and listeners from New York and other eastern cities would disagree with me and would take a much stronger approach with strong argument as one of their, let's say, implements, and that may accomplish their goal with some people. But the question you asked me was how to have the conversation without it becoming an argument. From there, the only other things you can do, as far as I can see, is to control your own behavior and your own reality as best you can by finding ways to meet your survival and security needs, whether or not other people participate in that. For me, that means I won't go into crowded places until I feel the virus is more under control. I will still wear a mask whenever I feel the need to do so, regardless of whether or not other people are. Personally, I will forever continue to practice the precautions that help prevent the spread of any germs, such as washing my hands, not touching publicly used surfaces with my bare hands, staying home when I don't feel well, etc. And, in all honesty, I was doing those things long before the pandemic, even though it was not what most people did. Change is rarely easy for most of us, and change that we do not choose and cannot control is even more difficult. Trying to change others is at the root of many conflicts and seems to be at the root of the arguments you described. Maybe the best approach is that first line of the Serenity Prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Thank you for your letter, Rob. I hope my answer was helpful. I look forward to receiving more letters with requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON at bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know that too. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.